What's Right with Nick Wright is a rapidly growing podcast from the Fox Sports Podcast Network. You may know Nick Wright from co-hosting FS1's First Things First. This podcast gives Nick a chance to develop, deep dive, and defend his sharpest opinions. During the show, Nick faces off against a ticking clock, a team of producers, and even his own family to try and get his points across. New episodes drop Monday, Thursday, and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
The greatest comeback in the history of the National Football League.
Live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Patrick Peterson was saying all we need is 5 touchdowns, and I thought, you watch the first half, you know, getting 1 touchdown is going to be tough, let alone 5.
The Rich Eisen Show. Today's guests. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport. Chargers wide receiver Keenan Allen. Pro Football Hall of Famer Terry Bradshaw. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this edition of The Rich Eisen Show live on the Roku channel. This Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio affiliate on The Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio network coast to coast. We also say hello to everybody who's listening on Sirius channel 218, XM 202, 992 on the app, the Odyssey stream. Those listening to us on a radio stream, we say hello to you. Those who are listening later on a podcast, it's your right to listen whenever you want. Cumulus Podcast Network puts out our show every single day in podcast form. And again, if you want to see us, we're live on the Roku channel every day. It is free on all Roku devices, Samsung Smart TVs, Amazon Fire TV. The Roku app that is free for you to put on your phone has the Roku channel on it for free. And the RokuChannel.com is a way to check us out on the internet every single day as well. We've got 3 guests. We've got 3 hours. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Chris Brockman, good to see you over there, sir.
Great to see you, Rich.
Jay Felly sitting in for DJ Mikey D again. Good
hey,
to see you.
Up,
TJ Jefferson, light that candle, sir. Light that candle, sir.
Candles lit, man. A little bit sad this morning.
No question about it. And
we'll make it through.
Well, and I can't wait to get your 2 cents on the subject matter of a shocking beginning. This is my last show of the year because we're off next week, and I'm heading to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania tonight for a game that I've been looking forward to all year long. As soon as this came out on the schedule, I knew NFL Network would be broadcasting the Steelers hosting the Raiders on the Saturday night, Christmas Eve of week 16. And I knew it was the Immaculate Reception anniversary celebration, the day after the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception, the Raiders and the Steelers purposely put on the schedule together in a night game for the whole country to watch. And I knew this because we made a special segment out of our schedule release show on it. And to talk about it, we had live on the show Franco Harris, who could not have been more excited about that game and that celebration. And he joined us live from Pittsburgh, PA, in front of the plaque and statue that they put together in the actual spot. As we all know, Three Rivers is no longer. But in the actual spot, he was standing there, big smile on his face, couldn't wait for the game. Game's finally coming on Saturday night, and we all wake up today with the news that Franco Harris has passed away. Died overnight. As of this conversation, we still don't know of what. We do know he was out and about. People are putting out photographs of, hey, I ran into Franco this week. He was on
yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday. People are putting out photographs. Here I am with Franco yesterday. You know, and I can't find the words, but I'm about to try, because he represents one of the most famous franchises in the history of the NFL, and his moment of catching the football off of his shoe tops, and of course Raiders fans would say off the turf, absolutely changed his life and changed the life of all Steelers fans and changed the fortunes of a Steelers franchise. And the Steelers that we know today, the organization that we know today as a winning franchise and a model of stability and a model of winning, he's the one who started it with that catch. Yes, there were other Hall of Famers he was playing around who were there before he got there in 1972 as a rookie from Penn State. But that catch that he made off of his shoe tops on that day, December 23rd, 1972, in a divisional playoff game against the Oakland Raiders, changed it all. Changed it all. And definitely when Terry Bradshaw took the snap on 4th and 10 from his own 40-yard line, down 7-6, with 22 seconds left and no timeouts left, he had no idea that the ball he was about to launch would launch everything I just said. And it would be launched off of Frenchie Fuqua, his intended target, and Jack Tatum. And that's an important distinction, because back in that day, there was a rule in the NFL that if a ball caromed off an offensive player, the only individual who could catch the carom was the offensive player. Any other offensive player who touched it, it would be illegal on the spot. So the big moment about that immaculate reception, where there was a huge to-do with the officials huddling up, wasn't about whether Franco caught it off the ground. It was, did it carom off of Jack Tatum or not? Because if it did, it's a legal grab by Franco. If it didn't, it's illegal and the Raiders win the game. But it was ruled a reception, and the immaculate reception that unfolded in front of everybody. Would you believe it was the first touchdown in postseason history for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yeah.
The Pittsburgh Steelers, and this is why I'm mentioning this in the manner in which I'm mentioning this, one of the many reasons. The Pittsburgh Steelers, kids, and people of many different generations, if you're not old enough to remember, they were terrible. They were terrible. Their only postseason appearance before that game. Their only postseason appearance before this season in 1972 was 1947, when they lost in the divisional round to the Philadelphia Eagles, who, by the way, they merged with during the war, World War II, to keep the NFL alive. The Steagles, look it up. And they got shut out in that game, 21-0. Franco Harris, in a 7-6 game where the Steelers were only able to put up two field goals, that was the first ever touchdown for Franco Harris in the postseason, for Terry Bradshaw in the postseason, and for the Steelers organization in the postseason.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. And then they go on to win a Super Bowl. Not just once, but four times.
Wow.
And Franco Harris in the Super Bowl that he helped make a reality with that immaculate reception, 158 yards rushing. First ever player to have 150 or more rushing yards in Super Bowl history. He wound up, when it was all said and done, with the most career rush yards in Super Bowl history, 354, which is a record that lasts today. And I would proffer to say this, in this day and age, this passing league where teams cannot get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, let alone win it in back-to-back years, often enough, who's going to break that? Who's going to be a running back to get back to the Super Bowl over and over and over again to break that record? Emmitt Smith is 289 rushing yards. That's behind him. Larry Zonka, he's the only one with over 300 rushing yards in his Super Bowl career. Emmitt has him by 30 yards just in terms of the most rushing yards by running back in postseason history. Franco is second on that list. And again, I proffer to say that record will be frozen in time as well. He is Only one of three running backs in NFL history to make a Pro Bowl in each of his first nine seasons. The other ones are named Jim Brown and Barry Sanders. Only nine players ever have done that. Jim Brown, Franco Harris, Barry Sanders, Merlin Olsen, Mel Renfro, Lawrence Taylor, Derek Thomas, Joe Thomas, he's going to the Hall this year, and Aaron Donald, whose string might get broken up. Most rushing touchdowns in postseason history, Franco Harris with 16, Emmett with 19. That's 2-1 right there. He was the rookie of the year in 1972. He also was part of the all-decade team of the 1970s, all-pro in 1977. When he retired, he was third in NFL history in rush yards and rush touchdowns at the time of his retirement. Most importantly, and anyone will tell you who knows him, and Pittsburgh knows this, he was the 1976 NFL Man of the Year. That's before, obviously, the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award was created. And he was all of that. He could have won that every year of his life. So giving of his time and heart. What a good human on the planet. And it is so crushing that he passes away 2 days before the anniversary, and 3 days before it is celebrated in front of a national television audience with his number being retired, just the third in the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it will now be done posthumously. Saturday night will turn into a memorial. Acrisure Stadium will turn into a cathedral.
Could be a celebration, though, man.
It will be.
Could be a celebration.
It will be. You know, it will be.
That's just the way I tend to look at
it. Well, no. But that's what memorials are, too. They, you know, people come and tell funny stories, and Terry Bradshaw is going to come in hour number three, and it will be a lot of fun stories and funny stories. And remember Franco this and that. As a matter of fact, we posted it on our Twitter feed, yeah. Ed O'Neill talking about meeting him at Joe Manganiello and Sofia Vergara's wedding. You know, I mean, and people are posting photographs of them with Franco because he was so ubiquitous and so giving of his time and always taking pictures with people, and Pittsburgh loves the man from the minute they met him on the field or in public to this very moment. And yes, you want to talk about a celebration. This man was able to bask in the glory of the Immaculate Reception for 49 years and 362 days of his life.
When you showed up at the Pittsburgh airport, you were greeted by George Washington.
Yes.
And Franco Harris.
Yes.
Not even show when you show up, because it's still
there.
There
were statues.
Really, when you arrived.
Of them, yes.
You're
of the Immaculate
see it in a few hours,
Reception.
You know?
And that's why, again, he is so special amongst the many special. Because we know the terrible towel, the Pittsburgh Steelers organization, and Mike Tomlin still will take the field on Saturday night with this Steelers team with the ability to win out and not have a losing record as coach. And Chuck Knoll, who was the coach on that day of the Immaculate Reception, stayed and then handed the reins to Bill Cowher, who stayed and handed the reins to Tomlin. This franchise is known for winning and stability in an era where, you know, when the NFL handed out that report to the owners last week, hey, $800 million has been squandered on fired coaches and fired front office members. The Rooneys are probably sitting back there like, pass that to 31 other people. You don't need to give that to us. we don't need that report. Dead money. Get out of here with that. That's for everyone else in this room. We know the franchise as that. They were not that when Terry Bradshaw took that snap on 4th and 10 with 22 seconds left and no timeouts from his own 40 and threw the ball that wound up in the hands of Franco Harris, who took it to the end zone. And when you think about it, what other moments compared to launching a dynasty other than, I guess, Mo Lewis knocking out Drew Bledsoe and bringing Tom Brady in? Like, that's the only moment. But that was just a moment that nobody remembered until, everything else that happened.
It wasn't a playoff game.
Correct.
It wasn't the last play of the game. It wasn't fourth down.
This was named the greatest moment in NFL history by fans and the greatest play in NFL history by the fans in the NFL 100 campaign a couple of years ago.
Without question.
And the man who was on the receiving end, who is going to have his number retired on Saturday night in celebration of this moment, I cannot believe Franco Harris has passed away. I'm sending nothing but my love and respect to his family, the Steelers organization, people from Pittsburgh, TJ, who, you know, must be completely overwhelmed with grief today.
Yeah, they're devastated. Devastated. You know, I'm a diehard Cowboy fan. We all knew that. But I grew up in the heart of Steeler country. So, you know, it's there whether you want it or not. I've watched more hours of Steeler football than anything else.
Sure.
Franco going to Penn State. And, you know, of course, I wasn't alive for the Immaculate Reception, but I had the opportunity to meet this man probably 5 to 7 times in my life living in Pittsburgh and living in Altoona. And it was just like, he was great. He was always welcoming and very cool.
Sweetheart.
And the nicest dude. And,
oh my gosh.
This big man with this big beard who you might be a little intimidated by, but I can remember being a kid and walking up to him at like a meet and greet once, and he just made you feel welcome. And that play, I think, epitomizes why he's such a legend in blue-collar Pittsburgh. You know, that just like not giving up when you're down 33-0.
Keep digging.
Keep your head up.
Yes.
Keep your head in the game. You could have been down. The game was over. But you hustled, man, and you followed the play, and you made the play. And that's, I think, why people love this dude.
And he changed the fortunes of a franchise and a city and his career and the other guys who are Hall of Famers.
And you
in
forget,
the making,
and you don't forget, but people forget when he retired, he was the third leading rusher in the history of the National Football League behind just Walter Payton and Jim Brown.
I am gutted. I am gutted, and I know every Steeler fan is gutted. NFL fans are gutted. The city is gutted, and it's the timing, man.
Like you said,
exactly,
it's going to happen,
and we will all get together on Saturday night to remember and honor and celebrate his life. And for the moment, though, sending all our love and condolences to the family of Franco Harris, the Steelers family, the city of Pittsburgh. Franco's Italian Army and all NFL fans from coast to coast. We'll talk about it with Terry Bradshaw in hour number 3. Ian Rappaport will be joining us coming up in hour number 2. And I mean, in about 2 minutes' time. Obviously, we'll take your phone calls on it at 844-204-RICH, number to dial all day. Franco Harris, dead at the age of 72. May you rest in peace, Franco. What's Right with Nick Wright is a rapidly growing podcast from the Fox Sports Podcast Network. You may know Nick Wright from co-hosting FS1's First Things First. This podcast gives Nick a chance to develop, deep dive, and defend his sharpest opinions. During the show, Nick faces off against a ticking clock, a team of producers, and even his own family to try and get his points across. New episodes drop Monday, Thursday, and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts. You're hanging out with some friends and putting back a few drinks. A few becomes a few too many. As the evening comes to an end and people start to head out, you think of calling for a ride. Nah, you live nearby. You can make it home okay. It's no big deal. What are the odds you'll get pulled over anyway? And even so, what's the worst that could happen? Your insurance goes up, you lose your license, you lose your job, you total your car, you kill someone? Everyone knows about the risks of driving drunk. The results are tragic and often deadly. However, that still doesn't stop everyone from getting behind the wheel while under the influence. That's why police officers are out there right now looking for impaired drivers on our roads to save lives. So if you think you're okay to drive after a few drinks, think again. Play it safe and plan ahead to get a ride. It only takes one mistake to change your life or someone else's forever. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, NetSuite by Oracle lets you know your numbers when you are sitting down to check out your balance and your spreadsheets and everything you need to know for your business. Guess what? It's outdated. And if you're not using NetSuite by Oracle, to see the full picture, you have got to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle if you're still relying on spreadsheets and outdated finance software. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system to power your growth because you get visibility and control of your financials, inventory, HR, planning, budgeting, and more. Everything you need to grow is right there all in one place. You can automate your processes, close your books in no time. That's how you stay well ahead of the competition. Over 32,000 businesses already use NetSuite. For the new year, NetSuite is a new financing program for those ready to upgrade at netsuite.com/richradio. Head to netsuite.com/richradio for this special one-of-a-kind financing offer on the number one financial system for growing businesses, netsuite.com/richradio. We're just a couple days away from week 16. It starts tomorrow night with the Jaguars and the Jets on Thursday night, and then the bulk of the activity is on Saturday. And joining us right now on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line with the latest on so many burning questions, hopefully getting some answers. He's an answer man. He's an information man. His name is Ian Rappaport, back here on the Rich Eisen Show on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line. How you doing, Ian?
What's going on, Rich? How are you?
I'm fine. Update me on Jalen Hurts. What do you know about his thrown shoulder? What do you got for me?
Well, it's a sprained shoulder. It's not worse, which I think is good, but it's a throwing shoulder, so certainly that's something that's a little bit of cause for concern. You know, I know that he said there's a chance he starts. I know that the Eagles have not ruled him out. Just based on where it all seems to be heading, it feels like he will probably miss this start. We'll see, but that's what it feels like, which means, you know, Gardner Minshew, who's probably one of the, certainly one of the top five backups in the NFL, should be, probably could start someplace, definitely this time of year. excuse me. He might end up being the starter. And, you know, I think if you're the Eagles, it gets interesting from there. Let's say somehow the Eagles win. They lock up the number one seed. They lock up a bye. Well, then, does it make sense to play Jalen Hurts for the rest of the year? Does it make sense, you know what, just rest him, get ready for the playoffs where you have nothing to gain in the regular season anyway?
Right. But he may play anyway. And that's the thing I don't understand. He may play. He may just miss the 1 week, you know, and there's no timetable for his return, whether it's this week or beyond, which means it could be more serious than believed. I don't think I'm alarmist in saying that, Ian. Like, what do we know?
If that's the case, like, let's say it is a multi-week injury. Well, you have, like, really 4 weeks from now. I mean, you have this week plus two more, plus if they have the bye, which I think they just win, you know, one more game. If they, you know, win this week, they get the bye, and if they don't, then there's some other stuff, but a bye is certainly possible, I would say, less likely. Then you have 4 weeks. So it doesn't feel to me like it's more than that. So either way, short-term and long-term this year, I think the Eagles are going to be absolutely fine, despite a somewhat scary injury to maybe their most important player.
So is this a game time? This is like 90 minutes before they're doing that? That's a real game time decision? What do you think? Against Dallas.
No, I think we'll probably know. I mean, if we get to Friday and Jalen Hurts hasn't played, I think the jig will probably be up. I don't think this will be one where we'll see, like, is he going to warm up? Is he not? I mean, there's all sorts of competitive balance stuff, and we'll see. But this doesn't feel like a big circus involving the starting quarterback.
Ian Rappaport here on the Rich Eisen Show. All right, so let's jump into some other quarterback scenarios. I guess if we're talking Philadelphia Eagles and their MVP quarterback goes down late in the season and they're, you know, just pretty much ready to wrap up the bye anyway, and we're talking about shades of 2017, that means Nick Foles has got to start. And lo and behold, he's going to start Monday night. Jeff Saturday announced Nick Foles is starting on Monday Night Football. Where in the world did this one come from? What is happening in Indianapolis, Ian?
Well, not a lot of good things, it seems, honestly. and I'm no football expert. I guess some might say I am. It's not good. It's not good. And the fact that they're going to their third quarterback, the fact that this is a team that, you know, lost their coach, benched their starting quarterback, is now in the third quarterback, just gave up, you know, probably the worst loss in NFL regular season history. I'm not sure there's a lot of positives, just being completely honest. And maybe Nick Foles leads into a win or somehow, some way. I don't know. Is it going to be part of their future? You know, seems doubtful. So then it's like, why would you do this? And the answer is, I have no idea. But, you know, I think for Foles it's a cool opportunity, but short-term for the Colts, long-term for the Colts, I'm not sure I see the answer here.
Right. I mean, I, talk, I guess why not? You got to throw everything out after you give up 33 points in the fourth quarter of one loss and then come back from a bye and then lose after scoring the first 33 points of that game too. But you blame the quarterback? I guess that there's no injury, well, best you can tell. There's just like, we got to try something else. And so we make the most, I guess, jarring change of them all.
Yeah, I don't know of an injury. That would be a surprise. And I think, you know, the real question to me is, why would you not have Sam Ehlinger start? Like, Foles is, you know, is he going to be the backup next year with a new coach and a new system? My guess, and Frank Reich obviously gone, my guess is probably not. Is Sam Ehlinger? I don't know. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. He's shown some flashes, some not great play. Wouldn't it be worth finding out if Sam Ehlinger is a part of your future, if he is a backup? Like, when else would you want to do it except for now, except they're going with a 30-something Nick Foles without a ton there for the future? Certainly some questions, I would say questions.
Wow. Okay, Ian Rapoport here on the Rich Eisen Show. Next one for you, Lamar Jackson. I saw the Ravens with my own two eyes and called the game with my own voice.
Biggest game of the weekend?
I saw it right in the middle of, two classics. I had that middle. I had that middle sandwich, and man, do they need him! And now Devin Duvernay is out. Their receivers haven't caught a touchdown pass since week three, and they got Sammy Watkins back, so they need Lamar. I mean, in the worst way. What's the scoop with him right now?
They need Lamar, and you know, this was the week, based on the people I've spoken with, that the Ravens expected Lamar back. I mean, it's 1 to 3 week injury. To PCL, which, you know, sometimes can take a little longer than maybe some other injuries, but, you know, they thought he would be back. And we'll see today. Maybe he's back at practice today. If they've had practice, they have not seen it. But otherwise, I think this would be a little surprising. You know, Lamar had an ankle injury last year, did not end up returning from it. And, you know, from this one, maybe a little slower than they anticipated. There's nothing wrong here. It's just, you know, they need him badly. He is, you know, it's funny, it's like his value is going up as he doesn't play. On the other hand, they really would just like him to play and just be awesome again. So we'll see when that happens. I think the Ravens are going to be okay, but certainly you'd like to see Lamar Jackson out there.
Well, because Calais Campbell and Marcus Peters are out too, right? They're not coming back either, it seems, for the moment.
I think those guys, that's probably 2 week injuries, which, you know, you get to this time of year, and the only injuries are they back for the playoffs or not? So if those are 2 week injuries and there's not much to play for, we may see them again in the playoffs, and that's it.
So it's like, let's see if Lamar practices today. Because again, today is like a Thursday for a regular season week, because the Ravens, pretty much everybody, but I guess, let me get the number right, 10 teams play on Saturday this week. And so this is it. I mean, this is rubber meeting the road. And all honesty, though, I mean, value for down the line, that's down the line. They need him back now. I mean, that team had base, and Dobbins had a rest day yesterday. He looked good. He said he's going to get his burst back, and he could be the answer. But Lamar, they got to have him. They got to get him, you know?
Yeah, they got to get him, and they got to win. But then they also need to win in the playoffs. So if it's a strategic, he's almost ready, we'll just rest him, that's fine. It's all fine. I mean, I think the Ravens are going to be in the playoffs regardless. You just want to make sure that there's nothing. And you know, John Harbaugh wears his sort of emotions / thoughts on his sleeve. He does not seem exactly thrilled with where the state of injuries are in his team. You know, said right at the start, I'm not talking about it. That was not a great sign, because there's a reason for him not to talk about it, apparently. So we'll see if he practices today. That will be very telling as far as whether or not Lamar will be back.
Ian Rapoport, my colleague from the NFL Network, NFL Media Group, kind enough to call in here on a very busy Wednesday on the Rich Eisen Show here on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line. Let's talk about the Titans. How significant is Ryan Tannehill's injury for a team that is suddenly in a free fall, and the object that's getting more and more closer, and maybe than they even appear, is Jacksonville? What do you got for me on Tannehill's injury and Malik Willis starting for the Titans here?
Yeah, I mean, it feels to me like Ryan Tannehill is a, you know, severe long shot to play this week. was in a lot of pain, came back somehow, some way, looked, well, I guess, okay, but he's dealing with injuries to both of his ankles this season. He is tough as anything. But as bad as that looked, the fact that he was able to come back, you sort of knew, like, all right, like, this is something that's real. So I think there's a very real chance we see Malik Willis start this weekend, and then, you know, we'll see after that. It's the time of year when the only kind of injuries are we'll see you in the playoffs or not. So if the Titans lose this week, does it make sense to bring Ryan Tannehill back on two bad ankles with a slim chance of hanging on? Maybe it does, but we'll see if he's able to do that.
Ian Rappaport here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, Ian, what can you tell me about the Jets quarterback situation? And I know Mike White, and I'm not talking about injuries. I'm just talking about the way that they're evaluating Zach Wilson, the offense that's being run, the locker room when he's in there, and the body language on the field when he's throwing to them, and Mike White having the exact opposite feeling to it, and yeah. What this means for the short term and the future. Like, open your reporter notebook on the quarterback situation best that you can for me, for the Jets, please.
Well, guys like Mike White, I mean, that's, you know, you hit on it. It's pretty clear. When he play, I mean, he's the guy who kind of gives people a lift. Now, does it matter on the football field? I would argue it does. You know, if you like the guy who's throwing to you, it, you know, does it help you finish one more route a game? Like, I don't know how it manifests itself on the field, but it's not nothing. Guys like Mike White. Now, Mike White is not as talented, quote-unquote, as Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson can make a lot of throws, and he was not bad last week. Like, I know he's carrying some baggage, and a lot of the receivers have been frustrated all season about the way he's played, and all of that is true. But actually, on the field last week, if you knew nothing, you would say, you know what? There might be something there. Maybe there is a little bit there. Throws at the end when you got to have it, game on the line. Like, there was some stuff there that I think was okay. So he's going to start Thursday, and I think if he has another, you know, sort of promising performance, you may see him again. If not, you know, then I think if Mike White is cleared, you'll probably see him. Best case scenario for the Jets, absolute best case, Zach Wilson goes out and balls, and you just keep giving him starts till the year end.
Yeah, of course, and that he merits it, and that he does take and
right, and that's worth it.
You know, and that his stat line of 300 yards and two touchdowns does merit. Does yield a win and also a sense that he has grasped whatever the reset required him to grasp, and that maybe the coaching staff is willing to let him out of the pocket instead of just saying stand in there and become more of a quarterback. It just seems like it just seems to be off. It really does, and that's why I'm wondering, because the next up for them is they got to go to see. I mean, this is. I mean, you know New York, man. I mean, he's going to be in front of all the Jets fans and the guy that every single one of those people in that stadium and everybody who roots for the Jets outside of that stadium, and that includes me, was rooting for them to keep losing so they could get the other guy that's on the field playing quarterback. And that guy is now ascending. And if he comes in and does what he's been doing to a Jets defense that has been the team's saving grace, then they're gonna let it all out on Zach. That's gonna happen tomorrow night, potentially. Ian.
And you know, one of the weird things in our world, and I wish it wasn't the case, but I made my peace with it a long time ago, is there is a increased importance to these standalone national games. It's just the whole country's watching, and sometimes you have, you know, casual-ish fans who watch more so than any time, other time, mm-hmm. and everyone reacts more. Everything that happens in these nationally televised standalone games is a little bit bigger. And if it's real bad, it's going to get real loud. On the other hand, maybe it's good. But I will tell you this, like, the way, you know, this was like a really feel-good Jets season, and I think this draft class is going to be real. You know, Breece Hall would have helped.
I think
draft class is going to be really, really good. This has turned, and that's really too bad because there was a lot of promise here at the start.
Last one for you, Ian Rappaport. You're taking a look at the way the draft order is beginning to shake out and who's got top picks and who doesn't. and then who's going to have quarterback decisions, whether you keep who you have or you draft somebody else, and the next couple weeks may have something to do with that decision, obviously, whether you make the playoffs or you don't. Which teams are you circling to take a look at on that front over the next couple weeks with the draft order shaking out, as I mentioned, the way that it looks, Ian?
Well, I mean, start right at the top, right? Start with the Houston Texans. Are they, I would say probably not that thrilled with their quarterback situation this year. We thought Davis Mills was going to be a thing. Seems like Davis Mills is probably a pretty good backup and, worthwhile draft pick, pretty good backup, but not your starter. So do the Texans right off the bat, do they take one? Chicago, probably not. Now, they have a lot of needs, and we'll see what it is, but probably not. Seattle is 3, I think, now.
Yes, they are. Now, that's the one you're circling, right? Sign Geno, or they keep him? And then
both. I mean, they could franchise tag Geno. They could sign him to a short deal and draft a quarterback. And because Geno is, a really good guy, I don't think that he would go crazy if they signed him and then took a quarterback. That's fine. Take a quarterback, don't play him for a year, and then we'll see what happens. The Lions, I know everyone assumes they're going to take a quarterback. I'm not so sure about that.
Neither am I. Goff looks terrific in this, and he looks smooth. His play-action game and these receivers, he's locked in on them. I mean, why would you mess with that? And he's been to a Super Bowl, honestly. I know people like dumping on him, but he's part of the reason why that they have won 6 or 7. They really have.
I mean, that was a good example of a nationally televised game taking on increased importance. He didn't look good in the Super Bowl, and it kind of went downhill, from there.
Right.
The thing is this. I'm looking at the list, Rich. You have Arizona, who's set. Indy, Atlanta, Carolina, New Orleans. All take quarterbacks?
Well, that New Orleans belongs to Philadelphia, too. Talk about the rich getting richer.
They probably don't need a quarterback.
Right.
Probably okay. But other than that, it could be all quarterbacks there.
Exactly. And then comes Vegas at 10. What are you hearing on Brady as we go out the door here for the next couple weeks, for the next
biggest,
3 weeks?
Biggest decision is, does he want to play? He has, his team has obviously struggled. He struggled some. He has always promised that when he wasn't good, he would walk away. He's, I will be extremely curious for his own self-reflection. What does he think? Does he think it's this offense, it's this team, or does he think I'm 45 and it's time? I have no idea. I kind of hope he plays because it's fun when he plays, but I'm fascinated by this looming decision with no one having a more important decision than Tom Brady himself.
Ian, thanks for the time, brother. Thanks very much. Oh, yeah, last one for you. On a scale of 1 to I can't freaking believe it, where do you stand on the Mets owner committing almost $1 billion in free agents over the last 3 weeks? What about that?
It's great. I've earned it. It's been a rough 2 decades, 3 decades, really my whole life.
Yeah.
The Mets have operated like a crappy small market team, despite being in New York and literally exactly the same as the Yankees, but it's been basically 3 decades. I've suffered through a lot of crap. I've been to a lot of bad games. I watched a lot of Steve Traxel starts.
Steve Traxel's been mentioned.
I deserve it. I woke up today, and I knew the Mets were interested. I knew they made a secret run at him.
Yes.
I didn't know. And so I went to bed last night being like, all right, the press conference is postponed. I'm crazy, right? And then I woke up to a million texts, and I'm like, it has to be Correa. There's nothing else it could be. So anyway, let's go Mets. I deserve it. I'm very happy.
Yeah, TJ Jefferson, you're in that boat too, huh?
We deserve it, Rap. We deserve
That's
it.
It.
All right.
Okay.
It's been a long time.
LGM.
Let's go.
Let's go Mets.
LFGM.
M-E-T dollar sign. That's how they're spelled right now.
Thank you, Uncle Stevie.
Ian, take care of yourself. I'll see you soon. We'll chat soon.
All right. Look forward to it. Thanks, Rich.
At Rap Sheet for the kids who want to follow him on Twitter. Join the millions.
And the millions.
And millions. I'm going to talk about his followers, not
Speaking
the Mets
of
payroll.
Buddy.
500 million with the luxury tax next year.
Dude.
Hey.
We'll talk about it. 844-204-RICH, hey. Number to dial here on the program. Don't go anywhere. I got a great story for you. I need your help.
About Steve Cohen?
Oh. No. This is on the personal front.
Gotcha.
Coming up.
Hold up. Prize Picks is daily fantasy sports made easy. How does it work? You pick 2 to 6 players, and if they score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, you can win up to 25 times your money on any entry. Didn't get your picks in before the game started? No problem. You can get in the game for the second half. Sign up today using promo code FOOTBALL and get your first deposit instantly matched up to $100. Go to prizepicks.com or download the mobile app and enter code FOOTBALL to get your deposit match. Some restrictions do apply. See the website for details.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the program. So, you know, about a week ago, right around here, right around this time, it could have been on this day, 1 week ago on our show last week, I mentioned to you that Susan and I watched Episode 1, Season 2 of The White Lotus.
Yeah.
Because you've been talking about it, and the country's been talking about it, and Susan and I have been able to keep our heads down enough that we don't have anything ruined. And you're like, you got to watch it, you got to watch it, you got to watch it.
So good.
We watched it, and as soon as it was over, we look at each other, we're like, what's the big deal with this thing? Like, we don't like any of the characters. It was weird. We just gave a weird feeling. I'm not a big fan of awkward TV. Mm-hmm. And we looked at each other, and I'm like, if I didn't watch another episode of this, I'd be fine.
Okay.
That's what I said.
Okay.
And she goes, yeah. Like that. Yeah.
Okay. I agreed with you at the moment because I was in the same. I finished the first episode and I was like, eh.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. I felt
so
the same.
I came on and I said this on the air and you're like, stick with it.
Stick with it. It gets so much better.
Right.
Yeah.
I did.
Every episode builds and builds and builds.
Just real like, you got to stick with it. Stick you got to go. You got to go. And I even said, hey, Succession was like that mm-hmm. for me when the first season hit. I'm like, I don't really like any of these people. Like, what? Give me a reason to stick with it. And then right around episode 3, episode 4, it took off like a rocket ship, and it's still going straight up out of the galaxy. It's so fantastic. So I'm like, okay, fine. I'll get back to that. You know, mm-hmm. put a pin in it. Noted is what I thought in my head.
Noted.
And then I went off to Cleveland to call a game.
Yeah, caught a plane out to Cleveland.
I did on Thursday. On Thursday, caught the plane to Cleveland on Thursday, arrived and was there on Friday, and then did the game Saturday. Got home Saturday night, did the show Sunday. And
I think I know where we're at.
And I said to Suze, you know, hey, Brockman said The White Lotus is really good. Maybe we should get back to it. And she goes, I got something to tell you. I'm like, what? She watched
yep.
almost all of it without me in a span of like 36 hours.
This was a text from her yesterday to me at 11:43.
During the show?
As we're getting ready for the final segment. Rich is so mad at me, I binged the entire season.
She did.
Except for the finale of White Lotus. And then she sent me that sideways crying face.
Oh, that's Susie Eisenhuffen.
What a violation.
I mean,
yeah, what a violation.
And then I wrote back, wrong, you know, I laughed and I went, he said he hated it. Isn't it so good? And she goes, weirdly so.
Weirdly so. So I say to her, I'm like, what do you mean? And first of all, she says to me, you're gonna have to catch up. And I'm like, you watched it without me? She goes, yeah. And I'm like, how much? She goes, you're going to have to catch up. I'm like, 2 episodes? No. 3 episodes? No. Like, how many? Like, you tell me.
Right.
And she's like, almost all of it.
Well, how much? Is
there's
almost
only 7 episodes.
Yeah, so, she got through 6, so you know, just not that
that's
many.
That's like 6 hours of television.
You know, they're long.
That's right.
I'd love to tap out with my wife and watch 6 hours of television.
Yeah.
You should just skip it, bro.
Don't skip it.
I'm not going to skip it. I've got it all on my
iPad. Oh, there you
iPad.
Go. You got a flight today.
Yes.
Bang.
I'm going to. I got to catch up.
Got to catch up.
Again, you don't got to. Like, I have caught up. I stuck with the Brockman reluctantly.
Wait, did you finish the whole thing?
I got to the, I think, end of episode 6 where Jennifer
so you're
Coolidge.
Right where Susie is. Don't say where. Don't say it. Because now I'm going
to. I'm just saying Jennifer Coolidge.
Oh, don't stop.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it.
I don't need to know anymore.
You know she's in it. So that's all.
No, I know. But
yeah, that's all I'm saying is Jennifer Coolidge walking around.
I mean.
In a hotel.
Come on.
And seeing stuff.
And so her, stop. She says, I'm like, so. I'm like, what gives? She goes, well, you know how much I love Italy. And I just like.
Oh,
she,
yeah. It's in Sicily. I'm like, okay. It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, uh-huh. But they're in the resort 99% of the time. So it's not like you're seeing.
They do. They do. And one thing you'll notice, Rich, it's super annoying. Not a spoiler at all. they only eat at the hotel restaurant.
Yeah.
It's like you're in Sicily.
I know, get
maybe
out.
Maybe go walk around town and try some of the local cuisine.
Whatever. I didn't even think
thing,
about that.
The whole thing. The whole thing is just like a complete, totally like a code breaking.
Is it? Is that a violation?
Absolutely it is. You know what it was like? You know what the excuse was in a way? It sounded like to me was Ross telling Rachel we were on a break. You said you didn't want it. Like we were on a White Lotus break. So I went and you were gone and I had the time. So I did it and I watched it.
I will say I have a similar situation with The Wire with Sarah.
Yeah.
When we first started dating, it was one of those things like, hey, everyone talks about how good this show is. I've never seen it. You've never seen it. Let's watch it.
Yes.
So we watched maybe the first two episodes. And like, I wasn't that into it. It's a little slow, I think, in the beginning. And it was like, put a pin in it. And then like a few months later, she was like, oh, yeah, I saw this guy. He was on The Wire. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, oh, I finished the whole show.
All of it.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? I was so mad.
Are you upset?
And I'm still mad
to this
day. Of
course you are.
To this day, I'm
still mad. Of course you are. Of course you are. Because The Wire...
One of the best shows ever.
Well, and it totally got overshadowed by The Sopranos.
Right.
I mean, The Wire is such an incredible ensemble show. It makes The Sopranos look like a one-man play. It's that sprawling and that amazing. So, but that's a lot of television without you. This is just, at least with Suze, it's like, you know, grand total of 5 hours, six hours.
Here's the other thing. Like, it's not something that you really had your heart set on watching, right? Was it something that you were kind of going to reluctantly watch it?
But she felt the same way as I did.
I know, but I'm saying, though, just I'm trying to make you feel better. Like, it wasn't something that you had your heart set on, and then she watched it without you. You were going to watch it to watch it.
I would never do that to her.
Well, of course you wouldn't, because you're not stupid.
Wow, there's a wrath.
You're not dumb.
That goes her way to you, that you would not go from your way to her.
Didn't we talk about fearing her last week? Of course you would not do this, because you're not stupid. But at the same point, it's not something that you had your heart set on. Like, you wanted to watch it, but, you know. I'm just trying to make you feel better, like I said.
I appreciate it. Like, last night, we saw, you know, the latest Yellowstone, and there's a commercial for Tulsa King, which I was prepared to White Lotus her on. And I said to her, I even said to her, I'm like, you want to, like, Tulsa King, are you out on that? And she goes, no, I'd watch more. I'm like, damn it, I was going to watch it in Pittsburgh.
By the way, I am caught up. That show is next level.
Okay, I'm in.
Still first.
I'm in. But I'll catch up on White Lotus in my spare time. Good Lord. Keenan Allen coming up on the Chargers.
We just want to recommend you not do that to her.
I would not.
Yeah.
I would not. But she's just like, you were out. You were out. And I'm like, yeah, I'm out, but I also... I kind of still had my finger on the chess piece. I made my move. It wasn't official yet.
I'm going to be honest with you,
I didn't think, like, she would... I left on Thursday right after the show and returned Saturday night. I was gone, like, 43 hours.
And she watched 5 episodes.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Binge. She's binging.
That's straight binge.
A total binge.
That's a lot.
That's like one every 8 hours, man.
That's just bam. She knocked
out. A total binge.
Yeah.
Here's the deal, though. It's going to take a while to get to something exciting, though.
Spouses don't binge without the other spouse in a healthy marriage like the one we have. It's not right.
It's good that she's honest, right? And so the lanes of communication are open.
But she knew. She knew when I asked her.
Right.
Like, it was, again, it was like the yodeler from Price is Right. It kept going up with each question about how many episodes? You know, how many episodes? And it kept going up until it fell off the cliff.
I think I would have lied. I think I would have lied if I was her.
No, because then she's going to have to watch it.
No. It's going to be open and honest.
Read the room. Understand how it seems like you're
peeved. Open and honest.
But Christian would have to watch those episodes over with him, and it's not worth watching that.
Anyway,
it is.
I'm catching up at 40,000 feet today.
Enjoy, my friend.
Heading east.
Enjoy. And some red on the flight.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well done.
I got red on the PJ,
of course. Wrap up hour number one right here on the show. Come on.
How wrestling really works and how you get the ratings. Eric Bischoff and Conrad Thompson explain on 83 Weeks,
You're either growing or you're dying. I think it would be hard to recreate the kind of growth that WCW experienced between 95 and 98. This audience should be growing. The characters should be coming more, and they're not. Everybody's gradually losing audience. Now, people will say, well, but AEW is 15% ahead of where they were last year. But there's variables there. Let's see where we're at a year from now.
83 weeks on YouTube or wherever you listen.